Chapter 28. The futility of her question came home to Mrs. Travers. In a few hours of life as he had been torn away from all her certitudes, flung into a world of improbabilities. This thought, instead of augmenting her distress, seemed to soothe her. What she experienced was not doubt, and it was not fear. It was something else. It might have been only a great fatigue. She heard a dull detonation, as if in the depth of the sea. It was hardly more than a shock and a vibration. A roller had broken amongst the shoals. The livid clearness lingered at scene ahead, flashed and flickered in expanded white sheets much nearer to the boat now. And all this, the wan burst of light, the faint shock, as of something remote and immense falling into ruins, was taking place outside the limits of her life, which remained encircled by an impenetrable darkness, and by an impenetrable silence. Puffs of wind blew about her head and expired. The sail collapsed, shivered audibly, stood full and still in turn. And again the sensation of vertiginous speed, and of absolute immobility succeeding each other with increasing swiftness, merged at last into a bizarre state of headlong motion and profound peace. The darkness enfolded her like the enervating caress of a somber universe. It was gentle and destructive. Its languor seduced her soul into surrender. Nothing existed, and even all her memories vanished into space. She was content that nothing should exist. Lingered, aware all the time of their contact in the narrow stern sheets of the boat, was startled by the pressure of the woman's head drooping on his shoulder. He stiffened himself still more, as though he had tried on the approach of a danger, to conceal his life in the breathless rigidity of his body. The boat soared and descended slowly. A region of foam and reefs stretched across her course, hissing like a gigantic cauldron. A strong gust of wind drove her straight at it for a moment, then passed on, and abandoned her to the regular balancing of the swell. The struggle of the rocks forever overwhelmed and emerging, with the sea forever victorious and repulsed, fascinated the man. He watched it as he would have watched something going on within himself, while Mrs. Travers slept sustained by his arm, pressed to his side, abandoned to his support. The shoals guarding the shore of refuge had given him his first glimpse of success, the solid support he needed for his action. The shallows were the shelter of his dreams. Their voice had the power to soothe and exalt his thoughts with the promise of freedom for his hopes. Never had there been such a generous friendship. A mass of white foam whirling about a center of intense blackness spun silently past the side of the boat. That woman he held like a captive on his arm had also been given to him by the shallows. Suddenly his eyes caught on a distant sandbank. The red gleam of Damon's campfire instantly eclipsed like the wink of a signaling lantern along the level of the waters. It brought to his mind the existence of the two men, those other captives. If the war canoe transporting them into the lagoon had left the sands shortly after Hassam's retreat from Damon's camp, Travers and Delcasser were by this time far away up the creek. Every thought of action had become odious to Lingard, since all he could do in the world now was to hasten the moment of his separation from that woman to whom he had confessed the whole secret of his life. And she slept. She could sleep. He looked down at her as he would have looked at the slumbering ignorance of a child, but the life within him had the fierce beat of supreme moments. Nearby, the eddies sighed along the reefs, the water sowed amongst the stones, clung round the rocks with tragic murmurs that resembled promises, goodbyes, or prayers. From the unfathomable distances of the night, came the booming of the swell assaulting the seaward face of the shallows. He felt the woman's nearness with such intensity that he heard nothing. Then suddenly he thought of death. "Wake up," he shouted in her ear, swinging round in his seat. Mrs. Travers gasped. A splash of water flicked her over the eyes and she felt the separate drops run down her cheeks. She tasted them on her lips, tepid and bitter like tears. A swishing undulation tossed the boat on high, followed by another and still another, and then the boat with the breeze abeam glided through still water, laying over at a steady angle. "Clear of the reef now," remarked Lingard in a tone of relief. "Were we in any danger?" asked Mrs. Travers in a whisper. Well, the breeze dropped, and we drifted in very close to the rocks, he answered. I had to rouse you. It wouldn't have done for you to wake up suddenly struggling in the water. So as he had slept, it seemed to her incredible that she should have closed her eyes in this small boat, with the knowledge of their desperate errand, on so disturbed a sea. The man by her side leaned forward, extended his arm, and the boat going off before the wind went on faster on an even keel. A motionless black bank resting on the sea stretched infinitely right in their way in ominous stillness. She called Lingard's attention to it. Look at this awful cloud. This cloud is the coast, and in a moment we shall be entering the creek, he said, quietly. Mrs. Travers stared at it. Was it land? It seemed to her even less palpable than a cloud, a mere sinister immobility above the unrest of the sea, nursing in its depth the unrest of men who, to her mind, were no more real than fantastic shadows. What struck Mrs. Travers most, directly she set eyes on him, was the other world aspect of Jorgensen. He had been buried out of sight so long that his tall gaunt body, his unhurried mechanical movements, his set face and his eyes with an empty gaze suggested an invincible indifference to all the possible surprises of the earth. That appearance of a resuscitated man who seemed to be commanded by a conjuring spell strolled along the decks of what was even to Mrs. Travers' eyes the mere corpse of a ship, and turned on her a pair of deep-sunk, expressionless eyes with an almost unearthly detachment. Mrs. Travers had never been looked at before with that strange and pregnant abstraction. Yet she didn't dislike Jorgensen. In the early morning light, white from head to foot in a perfectly clean suit of clothes which seemed hardly to contain any limbs, freshly shaven, Jorgensen's sunken cheeks with their withered coloring always had a sort of gloss, as though he had the habit of shaving every 2 hours or so. He looked as immaculate as though he had been indeed a pure spirit superior to the soiling contacts of the material earth. He was disturbing, but he was not repulsive. He gave no sign of greeting. Lingard addressed him at once. You have had a regular staircase built up the side of the hulk, Jorgensen, he said. It was very convenient for us to come aboard now, but in case of an attack don't you think? I did think. There was nothing so dispassionate in the world as the voice of Captain H.C. Jorgensen, ex-Spark Wild Rose, since he had recrossed the waters of oblivion, to step back into the life of men. I did think, but since I don't want to make trouble. Oh, you don't want to make trouble, interrupted Lingard. No. Don't believe in it. Do you, King Tom? I may have to make trouble. So you came up here in this small dinghy of yours like this to start making trouble, did you? What's the matter with you? Don't you know me yet, Jorgensen? I thought I knew you. How could I tell that a man like you would come along for a fight bringing a woman with him? This lady is Mrs. Travers, said Lingard. The wife of one of the luckless gentlemen Damon got hold of last evening. This is Jorgensen, the friend of whom I have been telling you, Mrs. Travers. Mrs. Travers smiled faintly. Her eyes roamed far and near, and the strangeness of her surroundings, the overpowering curiosity, the conflict of interest and doubt gave her the aspect of one still new to life, presenting an innocent and naive attitude before the surprises of experience. She looked very guileless and youthful between those two men. Lingard gazed at her with that unconscious tenderness mingled with wonder which some men manifest toward girlhood. There was nothing of a conqueror of kingdoms in his bearing. Jorgensen preserved his amazing abstraction which seemed neither to hear nor see anything. But, evidently, he kept a mysterious grip on events in the world of living men, because he asked very naturally, how did she get away? The lady wasn't on the sandbank, explained Lingard, curtly. What sandbank? Muttered Jorgensen, perfunctorily. Is the yacht looted, Tom? Nothing of the kind, said Lingard. Many dead? inquired Jorgensen. I tell you there was nothing of the kind, said Lingard, impatiently. What? No fight? Inquired Jorgensen again without the slightest sign of animation. No. Andy lay fighting man. Listen to me, Jorgensen. Things turned out so that before the time came for a fight it was already too late. He turned to Mrs. Travers, still looking about with anxious eyes and a faint smile on her lips. While I was talking to you that evening from the boat it was already too late. No. There was never any time for it. I have told you all about myself, Mrs. Travers, and you know that I speak the truth when I say too late. If you had only been alone in that yacht going about the seas. Yes, she struck in, but I was not alone. Lingard dropped his chin on his breast. Already a foretaste of noonday heat staled the sparkling freshness of the morning. The smile had vanished from Edith Travers' lips and her eyes rested on Lingard's bowed head with an expression, no longer curious, but which might have appeared enigmatic to Jorgensen if he had looked at her. But Jorgensen looked at nothing. He asked from the remoteness of his dead past, what have you left outside, Tom? What is there now? There's the yacht on the shoals, my brig at anchor, and about 100 of the worst kind of villain and vagabonds under 3 chiefs, and with 2 war cross moored to the edge of the bank. Maybe Damon is with them too, out there. No, said Jorgensen, positively. He has come in, cried Lingard. He brought his prisoners in himself then. Landed by torchlight, uttered precisely the shade of Captain Jorgensen, late of the bark Wild Rose. He swung his arm pointing across the lagoon, and Mrs. Travers turned about in that direction. All the scene was but a great light and a great solitude. Her gaze traveled over the lustrous, dark sheet of empty water to a shore beordered by a white beach empty too, and showing no sign of human life. The human habitations were lost in the shade of the fruit trees, masked by the cultivated patches of Indian corn and the banana plantations. Near the shore the rigid lines of 2 stockaded forts could be distinguished flanking the beach, and between them with a great open space before it, the brown roof slope of an enormous long building that seemed suspended in the air had a great square flag fluttering above it. Something like a small white flame in the sky was the carved white coral finial on the gable of the mosque which had caught full the rays of the sun. A multitude of gay streamers, white and red, flew over the half-concealed roofs, over the brilliant fields, and amongst the somber palm groves. But it might have been a deserted settlement, decorated and abandoned by its departed population. Lingard pointed to the stockade on the right. That's where your husband is, he said to Mrs. Travers. Who is the other? Uttered Jorgensen's voice at their backs. He also was turned that way with his strange sightless gaze fixed beyond them into the void. A Spanish gentleman, I believe you said, Mrs. Travers, observed Lingard. It is extremely difficult to believe that there is anybody there, murmured Mrs. Travers. Did you see them both, Jorgensen? Asked Lingard. Made out nobody. Too far. Too dark. As a matter of fact, Jorgensen had seen nothing about an hour before daybreak, but the distant glare of torches, while the loud shouts of an excited multitude, had reached him across the water only like a faint and tempestuous murmur. Presently the lights went away processionally through the groves of trees into the armed stockades. The distant glare vanished in the fading darkness, and the murmurs of the invisible crowd ceased suddenly, as if carried off by the retreating shadow of the night. Daylight followed swiftly, disclosing to the sleepless Jorgensen the solitude of the shore, and the ghostly outlines of the familiar forms of grouped trees and scattered human habitations. He had watched the varied colors come out in the dawn, the wide cultivated settlement of many shades of green, framed far away by the fine black lines of the forest edge that was its limit and its protection. Mrs. Travers stood against the rail as motionless as a statue. Her face had lost all its mobility, and her cheeks were dead white, as if all the blood in her body had flowed back into her heart, and had remained there. Her very lips had lost their color. Lingard caught hold of her arm roughly. "Don't, Mrs. Travers. Why are you terrifying yourself like this? If you don't believe what I say, listen to me asking Jorgensen."
"Yes, ask me," mumbled Jorgensen in his white mustache.
"Speak straight, Jorgensen. What do you think? Are the gentlemen alive?"
"Certainly," said Jorgensen in a sort of disappointed tone, as though he had expected a much more difficult question.
"Is there life in immediate danger?"
"Of course not," said Jorgensen. Lingard turned away from the oracle.
"You have heard him, Mrs. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter."